This is the Mind and Fitness Podcast. I am your host, Eddie Lindenstein, and talking to me on the from the other side of the world is Hannah Millington out of London. Hannah, how are you today?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I am terrific, and I'm happy that we were able to get this this thing scheduled, because the way that I came across you was almost like I'm a part of a lot of these like TMS and Dr. Sarno communities online, and then suddenly at the beginning of July, it was like any of the social media that I follow was flooded with this article from The Guardian that you had written. Because really, any time that Sarno gets talked about in any sort of any of the big publications around the world, I start getting alerts and things like that. And so, like, your article, it looks like it's been linked 2,756 times, and it's got about 300 comments, and it's only been up 3 weeks. So, pretty impressive stuff. So, you know, first though, I just want to start with getting some of your background. There's a little bit of it in the article, but, you know, kind of tell us some of the facts about you and some of the stuff that you're into and what it is that you do and how you started writing and that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So I suppose, well, I was a student, before this all happened about a year ago, an English literature and creative writing student. And then, you know, obviously my plan after leaving university and coming back home to London was to pursue my career in some form. I kind of never really got the chance to because of what happened. So now that I'm better, I'm sort of making up for lost time and beginning to do that now. I want to be a journalist, I think. So I'm actually going to be a student again. I'm going back to school, journalism school, in September. So really now I just sort of work here and there where I can, but that's my goal and that's what I want to be.
That's awesome. And journalism in the form of like, do you want to work for a newspaper or do you want to work for a television station, or what's kind of the end goal that you, when you close your eyes and imagine what the future looks like?
I think, yeah, definitely a newspaper or magazine. I want to write, and I want to, you know, use it in a positive way, because obviously I think so much of journalism now can be, you know, this sort of clickbait journalism with like non-factual stories, but I want to really use it in a positive sense.
Yep.
And as much as, you know, I enjoy writing, I'm aware that I'm training to be able to do that. So that's why I'm going to journalism school, really, to get some proper experience first. But yeah, so definitely I see myself working for a newspaper or magazine, you know, writing about these kinds of issues, I guess.
Awesome. Well, that was going to be my next question, is if there is any particular type of genre or topic that you like to, you know, that you generally are just more interested in, like to focus on?
You know, politics, I definitely have an opinion on that, but I don't think I want to be like a political journalist, especially not at the moment, even though obviously it's important. But I think my my interests are definitely, I guess it fits under lifestyle then, I suppose, you know, just raising awareness about topics such as mental health and all of that. But then also maybe more of a cultural journalist, because I think, you know, in those forms is where people can really make their points and their statements. You know, people have a voice in that way. So yeah, I think more of a lifestyle cultural type of writer is what I aspire to be.
Awesome. Awesome. What other parts of, you know, I'm always kind of curious, just because like the United States in its form sort of almost seems like a whole world away from a lot of the rest of the world. I know when my wife and I went to London and to Dublin and to Scotland a couple of years ago, it felt like we were on another planet in a lot of ways. And so are there any like particular, when I think of like lifestyle journalism and stuff like that, I think of people that are, you know, they're well-traveled. They see different parts of the world and they can talk about different cultures and things like that. Are there any particular hot, like, you know, vacation spots or places that you really like to visit?
I think, well, I'm about to go to Canada, so I guess that's more similar to what it's like where you are.
Oh, cool.
Because that's where my dad lives, so I visit him every year. So I know his part of Canada quite well. But I think my favorite place that I've ever visited would be South America. I traveled there a few years ago and, you know, wish I kept a diary on it, but wish I'd done something more with it.
Right.
So, yeah, my favorite spot I've been to is probably Bolivia, I would say, or Peru or Brazil, somewhere like that.
What part of Canada does your dad live?
He lives in Vancouver Island.
Oh, I was literally just there two or 3 days ago.
Really?
So you're going to be over on, you're literally going to be 100 miles from where I am. That's pretty crazy from where I live.
Really?
Wow. Cool.
Whereabouts? Where are you from?
I'm a little north of Seattle. So I spent I spent a lot of time like in these towns called Bellingham, Ferndale, and Linden for work, which are like, I don't know, 20 or 30 miles south of Surrey. And then you just keep going and obviously you can get to Vancouver there. But my buddies and I did a motorcycle trip up there over this last weekend. And the wait time for the border at the Peace Arch said that it was going to be like 2 hours and 20 minutes to get into Canada. We got in a lot quicker than that, but it's beautiful up there.
Yeah, no, it's beautiful. Definitely very different to London, but a lot more beautiful.
Yep. Cool. Well, so let's get into, you know, the brass tacks of this particular interview and a lot of the stuff that caught, my attention. And, you know, like a lot of people, there's certain things that you'd said in this article, which I'm going to link in the show notes. So anybody that's listening to this, if you have not read this piece, it's very well written. But you talk about basically kind of going through hell and back with a lot of physical chronic issues, and then eventually came out the other side. And so maybe we start at the beginning, like what started happening, what kind of symptoms were you having, those kind of things.
I guess so. My first encounter with this problem was a couple months after university when I was working, doing just a temporary office job, which was, I was only supposed to do for a short while and then I was going to figure out the rest of my life. But, it really started, I think now in hindsight, it was really strange. I kept getting ill. So I kept getting, stomach problems. I kept getting colds and throat infections. First of all, I got the worst case of the flu I'd ever had. And then the RSI followed that. And I think it just, it began with small twinges, sharp pains when I would click. But by this point, I was so embarrassed because I'd had so many other things wrong with me that I just couldn't say this was also wrong with me.
Right.
So I just, I just stuck with it really, and it got worse and worse each day and became, it would be my whole hand was in pain, and then, I could feel it going up my arm and into my shoulder sometimes. Like tingling sensations, sharp pain, burning, just weird combinations of pain that I hadn't, experienced before necessarily.
Right.
But, as with most pain, I assumed it would go away, which obviously it didn't. So that was, that was the first experience of that happening.
So you got diagnosed with a few things. And one of the things that I think is curious is that, for the most part, people that get interviewed on this podcast are in the States. There's the occasional Australian resident. There's the occasional Canadian resident. I've had a couple of people that are in England that are on here. But for the most part, this is from people that are, they're not in a place where there's universal healthcare. And so I'm always curious, you kind of kind of bouncing around the medical system or getting some of these different diagnoses that you got. Was it something where, because thoracic outlet syndrome, carpal tunnel, RSI, you were getting diagnosed with a lot of kind of similar things, but were slightly different. And so did you keep going back to the same doctor and they said, oh, well, the treatment for this thing didn't work, so now you have this thing? Like, what was the...
Well, because here we have NHS, so it's all free. But then obviously you do have to... So, for example, when I first went to my GP and told her what was wrong, she referred me, first of all, to physio, and I had to wait 3 months for my first physio session.
Wow.
And then, and so did finally got to do physio and, maybe helped a little bit with flexibility and stuff, but the pain didn't go away. She just told me I had repetitive strain injury. But because obviously it's free, you don't get to see these people that much. And then eventually I went back to the doctors and said, I wanted to be referred somewhere else because physio really wasn't helping me that much. But they just couldn't get a referral going and it was going to take another few months before I could see anyone. So then I kind of had to, which isn't something I'd usually do, had to go private, just to be seen. So, to pay to be seen quicker, basically. Saw another physio, and that's where she, first of all told me I had repetitive strain injury, and then I didn't get better from that, and she progressed it to carpal tunnel syndrome, and then I didn't get better from that, treating that, and then she progressed it to the thoracic outlet syndrome. So that was quite confusing because I could almost tell that she was searching for new answers and new approaches when it wasn't working. And then eventually I did go and get some tests done. And, before I'd even had my tests done, the doctor that I saw told me that he thought because I was really young, it was very unlikely I would have any of these syndromes, which was obviously confusing to me because that was all that had been told to me for all of these months that I was treating for these suggested things. And, you know, he told me it was very unlikely that I did have them and that therefore I had chronic pain and there was no cure, which was obviously quite depressing because you want something, you want an explanation and a solution. And then I got the tests done anyway. And I remember when I was getting them done and the other doctor that was doing them, I think, saw that I looked almost disappointed as he was telling me that they were all fine. And he asked me if I was disappointed and I said yes, because I felt like I was going mad. Like, why did none of my results show anything was wrong with me?
Right.
When I could feel so much that there was something wrong with me, and why for months had I gone through this whole process of having, you know, physio for these types of syndromes that I didn't actually in the end have. Yeah, it was all very confusing for a while.
Yeah, definitely. You know, it's interesting. Like, I'm curious, like what were some of the techniques or modalities that the PT was using on you as they progressed with these essentially like, you know, more serious or more dangerous sounding, at least, ailments? What were some of the things they were doing?
So with the repetitive strain, when that's what they said it was mostly just like hand exercises, hand and arm exercises. And then, you know, when it progressed to like thoracic outlet syndrome, or, you know, they said it was pinched neck, then they would make these sort of more full body exercises, or said I had to like bulk up more or do work on my neck or my back. You know, at one point because I was told, you know, it's my posture. So I had my whole back strapped up so that I would walk in a certain way. So yeah, it really was a big variety of things that they would do. It just sort of each new body part that seemed to be blamed for it would then just be targeted. And that's where I would have to do the exercises or, you know, increase my physical strength in that area or change the way I, you know, had my posture or sat or moved. So, and then that obviously just made me so much more aware of my body, because suddenly it'd gone from, you know, a problem with my hands to a problem with my hands, my neck, my arms, and so many more parts of my body were beginning to hurt.
You know, I think that's a really important statement that, and you glazed over it because it's something that I think about a lot, this idea of like body awareness. And I talked about this not long ago with a PT that was on this show that I had interviewed. And one thing that we were talking about was when my pain really amped up, I was at the end of doing physical therapy for a shoulder reconstruction, and I was so aware of my body, like every little, because a lot of the PT exercises would involve, you know, making sure that my shoulder blade is down and back completely before I do any of the stuff to increase the strength of the rotator cuff. And so I became way more in tune with my body than I think is healthy for somebody.
Yeah, exactly. Because I now had been told all these different ways that I needed to improve. And so even just walking down the street, I was aware, you know, was I walking correctly, you know, going to sleep at night, I had to sleep so differently to how I used to sleep. And yeah, I think it did definitely, I think everyone had the best intention, but it did definitely make it worse.
How old would you have been at this time, like while this stuff was going on?
So it first began when I was 22, I'm 23 now.
Okay.
So I think quite young, I feel for something to happen to someone.
Yeah, no, certainly is, very young. And so, you know, eventually you did turn a corner though. So how did you get, how did you basically find the mind body prescription, which ultimately ended up being the right, the right prescription, pun intended, for you?
honestly, I think I was just on, you know, one of those weird forums that you find yourself on when you're get desperately on the internet trying to find a solution. And someone had suggested the mind body prescription. And so I had it in my mind for, I think, a few months, but I really only ordered it and read it once I'd entertained all the rest of, you know, ruling out the medical stuff. Because it seemed as though for me, I think I needed to make sure that there was nothing wrong before I could even entertain this whole new way of thinking that I hadn't encountered before. So, you know, I found it recommended online and then I ordered it. And then just from reading it, honestly, I didn't have necessarily a miracle cure. It did take me then a couple more months, but just from reading it, I could type a little longer and I could use a pen for a little longer to write which, you know, I think me, just because the fear had gone and because I'd been given finally an explanation with me, which is what I guess I had been searching for so long.
Yeah, yeah, certainly.
So
there was a quote that you had in the article that I wrote down a couple of them, and one of the ones that I wrote down had said, "I just wanted something to be wrong." So elaborate a little bit more on that quote. I think I know what you mean, because I'd probably said the exact same quote a couple of years ago, but tell us what you mean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know it sounds strange because obviously it's a good thing now looking back that there was nothing wrong, but at the time, just, you know, going to doctor after doctor and seeing different people and no one really being able to give you an answer, and there was no clear you know, layout of what kind of treatment you needed to have that would make you better at the end of it, which is obviously not an experience I was used to. Usually, you know, when you have a problem, you go to the doctor and they understand the problem and they have their treatment, which, you know, works usually, or at least has the hope to work. Whereas this, they're just, it, you know, I just had confused doctors looking at me, or, you know, I felt perhaps like they thought I was exaggerating, or, you know, I was just being weak, I suppose. So I think I was searching for validation, I guess, just because if someone had said, "I know what's wrong with you, this is what you have," then I would have felt like, okay, I'm not crazy, this is real, I'm not making it up, I'm not losing my mind.
Right. Right. Certainly. And so you talked about like certain personality traits that you identified with in the mind body prescription. Talk about some of those and how they relate to you.
Yeah, I definitely did relate to some of them. I think just, well, first of all, not like necessarily expressing myself properly and, you know, people pleasing and putting everyone else's needs before my own. I think that's something that I've always done without realizing. Wanting to be liked, I suppose, that was a main one. And not really, you know, voicing when I didn't like something that I was doing, just sort of going along with it anyway. And probably not necessarily even at the time realizing I didn't like what I was doing, but just not using my voice as much as I should have. I guess assuming the worst in myself, being a perfectionist in terms of, I think not necessarily a perfectionist in terms of like tidiness, but being a perfectionist in terms of nothing ever sort of seemed good enough. There was always something wrong maybe with me or something that needed to be better. So not being able to maybe just enjoy what was, I think those were the main ones.
Yeah, definitely. And it's kind of like a recurring theme. And obviously all the Sarno books is this idea of perfectionism, but, I mean, I remember my wife had said she doesn't really see me as a perfectionist. However, the statement that you had made, which is always finding something wrong or critical, that's certainly something that I do with myself. It's like, even if I, have 100% at something, it's, well, it could have been 110, you know what I mean? That kind of thing. So talk us through a little bit about, you know, because you had said, like, you read the book, you had, you know, you could type a little longer, like there was certain little uptick, but that's, you know, that's obviously not, that's not a cessation of pain. That's not it going away. So what sort of things did you do that ultimately led to the pain going away, and how long did it ultimately take you to go from being debilitated to, oh yeah, this thing is gone, I've got it tackled, and it's, you know, it's behind me?
Yeah, so I think I just began with the most simplest thing, with journaling, and just writing everything down, and writing, you know, I always used to enjoy writing as a form of expression, but sort of using it more with, you know, sentence structures that really expressed how I was feeling, such as, like, you know, just something as simple as "I feel that" was helpful. And then, so I would write down my negative thoughts, and then I would try sometimes to end it with a positive, so that I would release all the bad stuff, but I would leave the page feeling, you know, hope from it, I suppose, and feeling replenished from it. And I would write down every single life event I could possibly. I wrote about my personality traits as well. And how they have impacted me. I also tried to think about, and not where I'd had chronic, but where I'd had something which is similar mind-body illnesses, such as, you know, I've had bad skin in the past and stomach problems and anxiety. I tried to write about what was going on at the time that that happened. So to start with, I really just wrote everything down for about a month, I would say. And it definitely improved a lot, but I sort of reached a level anymore. And so then that's where but I think I needed a little extra help. I found a TMS therapist and went to see her, which was a really good decision because that helped massively. And then she, you know, we did similar things. We discussed life events when I went to see her. She just sort of helped me stop also having, you know, automatic negative thoughts, have more belief in myself, be more positive, and just sort of having someone say, you know, you can get better and it is possible was also just massively helpful as well. And she also taught me, you know, how to write like positive affirmations and stuff, which I would read every morning. So obviously it's quite difficult because your mind wanders back to that place of, oh, what if there is something physically wrong with me, or what if they didn't find something? And so if I wrote down on my list, you know, like, you've had tests done and there was nothing that found, so therefore it must be emotional. Those things every morning just helped reading that.
Right.
And I would set goals. So even just things as small as, you know, today you'll type half an hour. And then before the goal, I would visualize doing it pain-free. And then after it, I would congratulate myself, which sounds bizarre, but like, getting new positive associations with things which you've had negative associations with for so long, I found really helpful. So it was a combination of lots of things. And I think in total, you know, I felt a lot better after maybe 2.5-3 months.
Oh, that's great. And the therapist, was this in person in London?
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool. And it, what, cause it sounds like you almost hit, cause the sound feed was cutting out a little bit during the part where you were talking about, I think, basically that journaling took you to a certain distance, but ultimately kind of hit the ceiling basically. And then thought, well, I need a little bit more. And so I'm going to work with I'm curious on like, things like going to see a psychologist and how it works in a universal healthcare system. Mm-hmm. Is that something that's free as well? Or is that something that's private, or how does that work?
Oh, no. This was private, but also, you know, the type of therapy that I went, the TMS therapy, stress-related illness therapy, doesn't really exist unless you find someone that does this specially.
Right.
It's not something that exists on our healthcare system. So, yeah, I had to do a lot of research and found, you know, there was this company that I found with a woman, an English woman, who was a physiotherapist. And she, I guess, began to wonder why some of her patients never got better. And she actually flew out to America and met Dr. Sano and I think trained with him, and then came back to England and made, you know, her own company where she then trains other health practitioners. So I went to see someone that was trained by her. She was actually originally trained as a hypnosis practitioner, but which she also incorporated in some of my therapy, which was really helpful as well. I found hypnosis very helpful, not in terms of hypnosis, you know, being telling you won't be in pain anymore, but just helping you, I guess, get to that kind of subconscious level, which is so hard to do independently, I felt at times.
Is this, is it Georgie at Serpa, or is this somebody else?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. That's the company.
I thought of, I was thinking like, this sounds awfully familiar. that's somebody that I've, that we've gone back and forth for, I don't know, probably a year trying to get a time nailed down, and it's going to happen eventually. But, I've had a couple of Serpa trained practitioners on this podcast, and it's really pretty amazing what she has built terms of like a network of people, that really sort of specialize in this particular thing. One thing I'm curious about, because you're a journalist, and I that was kind of the first thing I wanted to do when I went to college was become a journalist, and I took a lot of it. Took a lot of courses like that. I mean, even like shorthanded writing courses for the purpose of attending press conferences, you know, things like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
is that because you're somebody who went to school and was training for creative writing and things like that. What's sort of your take on creative writing and journaling being such a, because there's a lot of people in the world, tens of thousands, maybe even hundreds of thousands, that use journaling as their sole method of getting pain free from a really debilitating chronic condition. So is there any particular take on, or any knowledge that you had, even the most vague of knowledge, before, you know, before the chronic pain stuff, that writing had some kind of an association to healing chronic pain? Or was that completely foreign to you?
No, yeah, I guess it was kind of foreign to me. It wasn't foreign to me in the sense that I always used to use writing to deal with emotional problems, but I would never have myself realized, okay, this is how you can deal with chronic pain problems. But I think because my issue was with my hands, I think maybe if it was another part of my body, I would have come to that realization, but I was quite restricted in what I could do in that sense. I couldn't write and stuff. So I was kind of held back a lot creatively at the beginning, which I also do think probably made me worse as well, because I didn't have an outlet from it.
Right.
So yeah. And then when I, just from reading the book, was seemed to be able to write for longer, being able to do that definitely massively helped. And obviously I wish I was able to do it sooner.
Yeah. Yeah, certainly. And so at this point in time, like where are you at? Like, is it totally, you know, are you totally pain-free? Is there anything else that comes up, maybe that you first, maybe have a little freak out moment, like, oh, this is something new, and then kind of back off and you're like, oh, never mind, I know what this thing is.
Yeah, I did. Well, in terms of fully recovered, I would say it's hard to explain. So say if I was at 100% pain before, I would say now I only ever reach 20% pain.
Yeah.
And it would never stop me doing anything, if that makes sense. So most of the time I don't really feel pain at all. And if I do feel little twinges, they never get bad enough that it, you know, puts me out for the day or stops me doing anything. And I'm confident that it won't affect me in that way anymore, if that makes sense. And I'm confident that hopefully the more I try and do these things, the less it will happen. But I did notice when I was getting better in that way, other just weird little things like, my eczema that I had got really, really bad. But because obviously I'd been told, you know, you might have other symptoms come up because it's, you know, maybe transferring into other places. I wasn't so fearful of it. I also had my knees started to hurt for a while. I was sort of limping around. And obviously before this would have panicked me again and I would have thought, oh no, there's something else. But because I'd had this experience, I sort of felt a bit more confident with it and sort of treated it in the same way. And they both themselves got better.
Yeah, which is, I think, I feel like maybe one of the bigger gifts that's not really talked about. You know, even people that fully recover, it's kind of like, I had this thing that hurt a lot. I found my, you know, the right prescription for me. And really, like, that's the end of the story. But I feel like one of the bigger takeaways is when this new thing comes up, I know what the root cause is, and I need to do some internal some internal work or what have you on it. And there was this really cool recovery story on the thankyoudrsarno.org project that was done before he had passed away, where this woman wrote this recovery story, and she said, I still tend to get Sarno things. I mean, she had like crawled into his office like a crab once in the 90s or maybe the 2000s. And she had said that, you know, my back is so badly damaged, I can't even stand up. And he basically just, you know, barked at her and said, you wouldn't have been able to crawl in my office if your back was as bad as you think it is. So, you know, stand up. And she said the whole visit was like 15 minutes, and that it completely changed. She was like, I still get, you know, mock arthritis and mock bursitis and all these things, all the itises basically, but I know that they're not really going to go anywhere.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. I wish I'd been able to have that experience of going to see someone like him that would give me a similar, tell me something similar. Yeah, that makes sense.
One of the questions that I always like to ask is like, you know, for a while you had probably friends and or family that, saw you in pain or saw you having issues, and, you know, then they kind of see this radical change and they may not even know what happened. Did you have anything like that where maybe people were like, whoa, Hannah, should you be doing that?
Yeah, definitely. I think as well, I mean, I can't even blame people, but because I was told so many times, you know, by some doctors that I should be wearing a wrist splint, and then other times I was told not to. So, you know, I felt like if I had my wrist splint on, I almost felt like people felt more comfortable with that because that made sense to them. Whereas if I didn't have it on, if I went to pick anything up or do anything, they'd be like, be careful, don't do that. And then obviously that was quite difficult when I was trying the new approach and the new way of treating myself. And people were still being like, do you think you should be doing that? And telling me to be careful. Definitely, yeah, that happened. And, you know, being confused as to how come I was doing something different this week that I was doing last week. And, you know, yeah, so I definitely experienced that.
Right. Yeah, certainly. Well, we've come to about 30 minutes, which is what I had promised. Is there anything, you know, departing that you want to say? I feel like your perspective of being a writer, and that's the field ultimately that you're going to go into, and now having this piece that's in The Guardian, and to me, writing was probably the biggest, you know, the biggest solution for you ultimately, or the biggest contributing solution. Is there anything that you want to close with, maybe that's in particular to that?
In particular to writing help?
Yeah, to writing and your perspective as a writer.
I guess for me, what's been so special is, you know, what I always wanted to do was write. And then I had this issue with, you know, chronic pain in my hands and could no longer write, which is not something I ever envisioned happening. And now not only am I able to do what I've always loved, I was able to write about what had affected me. So I was able to do what I love, to be able to raise awareness about this new issue that I'm now so passionate about. So I think now I can be appreciative that the two have come together in a good way, rather than a negative way. So I guess now I'm thankful for the experience, because before, I think maybe as well, I would always have self-doubt, you know, that I wasn't good enough to be a journalist and a writer. Whereas because I've overcome this, I now think I can be good enough, and hopefully I will get there.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I'm glad I found you. I'm glad I got to get in touch with you. So thank you for your time so much, Hannah.
That's all right. Thank you for calling.
Okay. Thanks, Hannah. Take care. Bye.
Thanks. Bye.